webcasting to the world, live, the good news of God's righteousness for all humanity. This is the Gospel Revolution Radio Network. Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein Online. It's hump day, Wednesday, March 11th, 2009. The only March 11th, 2009 in the history of humanity, and the only second night of the winter webcast for the Gospel Revolution. Welcome in, helping you over the hump of the week, Glenn Klein Online in studio in beautiful Tampa Bay, Florida. We've got Sean O'Halloran in studio, who is messing with another computer right next to me for some reason. Why are you doing that, Sean?
What's up, Sean?
And I got Joe Klein in the house, numero uno, and who's done a fantastic job touching up today in Houston, Texas, Mr. Michael Williams. Michael!
Good evening, Glenn. I have been touching up in Houston today.
Well, this is night number two of the Gospel Revolution Winter Pledge Drive. We have a goal of 25,000, as most of you beautiful humans know. And it took a long time for us to get our first call last week. It took over an hour. Well, of course, we extend the webcast 30 minutes, primarily because we take about 30 minutes to talk about our financial needs. And so we spend the rest of the time talking about the gospel. And it took about well over an hour. In fact, it was, I remember, because it was 10 minutes after the hour, and I figured, you know, what the heck? Do you want to go on for another 20 minutes of this? And you said yes, and the phone rang, and it was Richard Mull, who contributed $100 and got us going. And we realize that you beautiful humans, many of you listen on the archive. And so that it's really a pledge week is what we have. And our goal of 25,000, basically we have 21 days, so we have to, if my calculator would work, 25,000 divided by 21 days equals $1,190.48 a day. So we need about $1,200 a day during these 21 days to get to the 25,000. Well, we're happy to report after Richard started us out, and then Tomsky called in from Ohio and joined the revolution at $50 a month. We've had a series of people give during the course of the week that we're going to be talking about as the webcast goes on. But the whole point of this is that we really want to start fast tonight. And somebody is listening live. And whether you're going to give $10 or $100, it doesn't make a difference. Even if you don't want to give any money or can't give any money at all, your participation, we had a great call from Abraham Mackey, who's already a giver, last week, that it was a hugely beneficial to the webcast. I think that's the point, Michael. Let me give you the phone number, folks. First of all, 1-800-436-3260. Somebody, get on the phone right now. Get us off to a fast start. 1-800-436-3260. Sean and Joe are waiting to take your calls. 1-800-436-3260 if you're listening live. If you are listening on the webcast archive, just email us. All you got to do is go to gospelrevolution.com, click on donations, do your best, and then at that point, you just email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com and let us know what you did so we can count it towards 25,000. I will tell you that we are at $7,250, which is fantastic, and those are large gifts, Michael, and small gifts, and it all adds up. We'll be talking about the individual givers, and I think that's the point, Michael, is that whether it be large or small, it's just the participation that is critical.
Yeah, and it is the participation, and you know, the it was to me, and not just for the gift, but when our new caller called in, had been listening for such a short period of time.
Tom Tonsky.
Yeah, Tom called in and with a $50 a month, took us up $600 for the pledge drive. But it wasn't just the gift. It was the story that he told as to why that he wanted to be a contributor to the Gospel Revolution, and he was not a novice, not only at Christianity, but he was not a novice with the consideration of Jesus redeeming the world.
Right.
He had just dabbled in other universalist type doctrines, and I think his comments were ones that everyone who's been with us for so many years really can take a lot of appreciation from it. Finally heard something that made sense. He believed it, but he didn't have anything that put it into a framework that was understandable and comprehensive.
Right. He said he had been reading about what he called our ultimate redemption,
right,
or universal redemption,
right,
or total redemption, TR, for 20 years. And it never heard it so concise and consistent and logical. And so we want to thank Tom for that big contribution last week and for calling. And we're asking you to call right now, 1-800-436-3260. Who will be the first caller tonight? 1-800-436-3260. For gifts of $100 or more, you will receive free and postage paid the classic Mike Williams teaching CD, God Destroys the World, the topic of our email post today, God Destroys the World. And it was spawned by this article that I came across a couple days ago from WorldNet Daily, that pastor and best-selling author and founder of a major ministry to teens predicts an imminent earth-shattering calamity centered in New York City that will spread to major urban areas across the country and around the world. Part of what he sees as a judgment from God. David Wilkerson, author of The Cross and the Switchblade, a book about his ministry that troubled New York street kids, that was later made into a movie starring Pat Boone, tells readers of his blog this weekend that he is compelled by the Holy Spirit to send out an urgent message about his prediction. An earth-shattering calamity is about to happen, he writes. It is going to be so frightening, we are all going to tremble, even the godliest among us. Wilkerson...
of which he places himself as a part of, it sounds like.
Wilkerson's vision is of fires raging through New York City. It will engulf the whole megaplex, including areas of New Jersey and Connecticut. Major cities all across America will experience riots and blazing fires, such as we saw in Watts, Los Angeles, years ago. There will be riots and fires in cities worldwide. There will be looting, including Times Square, New York City. What we are experiencing now is not a recession. It's not even a depression. We are under God's wrath, said David Wilkerson. If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? All right. Now, David Wilkerson has been a fire and hell and brimstone preacher ever since I got into this thing.
Oh, yeah.
And what do you say to David?
Well, the same thing I said to David for the last 25 years. You're wrong, dude. And he has been wrong every time. And I've spoken up about David Wilkerson's teachings on the judgment of God because, see, that was the major thing that was out there when I first started sharing the Gospel of Peace in 1982. And had 1983, and had been studying it for 5 years before that. So David Wilkerson's proclamations were always at the forefront of the contradiction to what I was teaching. And so when I came out, I pointed out David Wilkerson's predictions and the things that he had said, such as that the judgment of God, that the fires at Universal Studio was the judgment of God for producing the movie The Last Temptation, And I challenged that. I explained what that was, and I explained how that it was the older part of the studio, and it was well covered in insurance, and believe me, they rebuilt, and they were glad, and most people would have torched their own business if they could have got the kind of insurance money out of that that Universal Studios did. And then they arrested a man who torched it. So it was the first time that we have recorded that after Wilkerson's proclamation that it was the judgment of God, that God employed an arsonist. He ran out of fire and brimstone. He ran out of even lightning bolts and had to employ an arson who we gladly put in jail for doing God's will. So it was things like that, Glenn, that I first began to point out the how ludicrous it was to even think that the Universal Studios fire was the judgment of God and on down the line. And David Wilkerson had prophesied another great calamity like this, and I stood up and foretold that he was wrong and would be wrong. And the teachings of grace that I was teaching had gotten into his hand, and he went into a long period of time of his writings and his broadcast, mainly his writings, of refuting what I taught on the grace of God. But when it came to the judgment of God and whether or not it was coming and what he had predicted, he's had people gathering cans of peas for years.
Gathering cans of what?
Cans of peas and corn.
Oh, cans of peas.
And he has been doing that for years. Now, the nice thing about it is that they say that because of the Judgment Day purchasing, it can actually help our economy because people are buying more. I can't imagine there's that large of a segment of the population that would follow his instructions, but there are. A lot, and gosh, I still know people that have toilet paper left over from the last call for judgment, 15 years ago. And every time I have spoken up, every time I have been right and they have been wrong. Now, I'm not gloating in the issue of being right. We're trying to help people to not have to live in the fear of this ridiculous preaching. And I do call it ridiculous. And David Wilkerson, I have to do something right now because Isaiah 61, I believe it is, after preaching and Isaiah prophesying the gospel of peace, said, "And every tongue that rises in judgment thou shalt condemn, for this is the heritage of the servants of the Lord." Not every godly person is going to be really tested by God's judgment. The prophecy said, "This is the heritage of the servants of the Lord." And the heritage that has been passed on to us is the privilege and the declaration to expose every judgment preacher on the face of the earth. And I am very pleased, very pleased. I'm excited to be able to proclaim to you that whatever happens, that it will not be a fulfillment of Wilkerson's prophetic word of God's judgment or wrath. If all of New York City caught on fire, it still could not possibly be the wrath of God, as he said, because the wrath of God was satisfied according to the prophet Isaiah and according to the teachings of Jesus. When he went to the cross, it said that now is the judgment of God. And he said it was now. Now is the judgment of the world. It was happening right then. So David has missed the great day of the Lord. He doesn't realize that great and terrible day, as prophesied by Isaiah, took place 2,000 years ago, because the prophets foretold of a day that would be the great and terrible day of the Lord, and it would also be the day of redemption. So the great and terrible day and the day of redemption were designated to happen simultaneously. And when you look at the power of what the cross took into the body of Jesus to absolve and absorb and to do away with all wrath, anger, and judgment from God, you can't go around preaching those things of judgment and anger and wrath. So in the spirit of what I am required to do, David Wilkerson, I rebuke you for misleading and misguiding and falsely prophesying to the people something that cannot possibly happen. It cannot happen. And you have been wrong your entire life.
Yeah, even from a practical standpoint, he says that there will be riots like there were in Watts.
Now, he didn't prophesy that. Well, that's true.
Well,
and there were riots in Watts. Why didn't he prophesy that?
And why wasn't that the judgment of God at that point? How do we go on for 40 more years after those riots and get ready for another round? I mean, it is so ludicrous. But the money keeps on coming in, and the prominence is there. He's got the Times Square Church, and
he didn't foretell the tsunami. He didn't foretell that, the greatest human disaster that's taken place in his lifetime, for sure. He missed that one. Why did he miss that one? You know, it's really amazing that all these guys, Van Impe and all of them, none of them have prophesied the real catastrophes on this planet, and every time they have foretold catastrophes, it has never, ever, not one time happened. Lump them all together. It has never happened. It's amazing. I remember seeing one that some little preacher on TTL, and this was like a year after 9/11, and he found somewhere that he said something sometime before 9/11, which was probably several years before or months before, who cares, but something about something sounded so similar to it, it just had to be it. And so he was proclaiming. So nobody got it, though. Nobody understood that his prophecy, which he said was all about 9/11 and declared, oh, I was right, I got it right, I got it right. Well, nobody got it, and you didn't tell them that it was the World Trade Center.
Not only that, but why would God's judgment come upon people who, some of those 3,000 people that died in New York City and at the Pentagon and in Pennsylvania would have qualified for being a godly person?
Absolutely.
Why would they perish in something like that if it was the judgment of God coming against the wicked?
Yeah, because, you know, and one thing you can be sure of is that the precedent of judgment in the Old Testament was that God always separated those who, quote, deserved the judgment from those who, quote, did not deserve the judgment. He went to great extents to make sure that no innocent in the situation ever suffered. He always separated. Well, you know, and it's like I started saying years ago, I had to make jokes out of it to get people to even start thinking this way. Glenn, people didn't even think about the gospel of peace that I know in Christian circles and still until I started preaching it all those years ago. But when people would, when I would challenge these things, it's like, okay, so God was very specific with his judgment as to who it was on, and now babies and innocent people and church folks and praying people and tongue-talking people all get trapped in God's judgment. And I told them, I was being very facetious about it. I said, well, I guess God's a little older now, you know, and his aim's not as good. You know, he's not as good at getting this done as he was in the Old Testament. So not only is his judgment continuing, but he's getting a little bit senile and being able to administer it. And, you know, one thing for sure, you can't say things like what I'm saying now unless you absolutely know in your heart it's true. Because with what I was taught, let me tell you, I'd be sitting here in my chair in my office in Houston, Texas, waiting for whatever it is to break through my window, my computer to explode, or whatever to knock me dead.
Right.
And once I got an understanding of the gospel of peace, my heart was convinced of it. But let me tell you, the conversion of my mind to accept that reality, I walked around all the time, still looking around, you know. You hear a sound, look up and see if a meteor was headed toward me. And because, you know, and I understand what the renewing of the mind is, that your heart can be so convinced of this glorious gospel. But folks, don't be concerned that you, you know, you hear David Wilkerson and it makes the, man, I hope Brother Mike's right. Because I used to do the same thing. I was saying, oh, I hope Brother Mike's right. I remember one of the times sharing, I think I've shared it before, in Amarillo, Texas. And I was up, right when I started sharing the gospel of peace, there was one of those big Texas thunderstorms you could hear coming way off in the distance. You know, just a rumble, rumble, rumble. And by the time I got into the middle of my message, it was moving right across the city of Amarillo. Lightning and wind started blowing so hard. And about the time I got to the part where I was explaining that if I was wrong, God could strike me dead right now. And everybody in the whole building, I mean, by this time, the storm was over the building. And lightning was striking everywhere. And me and everybody in that church was sure hoping I was right. Because I was mocking every judgment preacher that had ever walked the earth since the cross. And the same as Jesus should have been, and truly was, in the eyes of God, the last teacher of the law, the last one to ever prophesy that judgment was coming should have been Jesus. And it was Jesus.
And it was coming.
Yes, and it did come.
And the end of the world did happen.
At the end of the world, the judgment, the last day, the all of those terms.
The great and terrible day of the Lord.
Yes, and they are now so beautiful. Man, can you imagine being able to read the great and terrible day of the Lord and the last vial of wrath to be poured out and all of these comments, and now that there's just been a flood of understanding in context about every one of those subjects individually, and they all point to one thing, and that is the cross of Jesus Christ. There is nothing about David Wilkerson's teaching and prophecy that points people to the cross. It points them to believe that the cross was completely ineffective, that the cross meant nothing, it did nothing for nobody, and now we're having to scurry and hide from the judgment of God? You know, it's a topic that, you know, for many years, and he's right in his article, he talks about how that it's been a long time since anybody's talked about this stuff. And he's right, because people have been waking up to the reality that these guys have been wrong every time they've ever opened their mouth.
Right.
So, you know, and people would say, well, what do you think we ought to do with Ralph Wilkerson? I think he ought to go on Larry King. I think he ought to go on Oprah. I think he ought to go on every possible broadcast and let us put him on the spot. But you know what will have start happening then? The moment he gets put on the spot? Well, this will happen if. And if God's people start praying and if people repent and if there's a prayer meeting and if God changes his mind. Right now, you can read the article. People can read the article for himself. He absolutely prophesied this is going to happen. No ifs, ands, buts, or maybes.
Yeah, but he didn't give a date.
He didn't give a date, and he will change his tune.
There's no doubt. I mean, this gives you a little bit of an idea of what Mike's teaching on God's destroying of the earth or God destroys the world is all about, folks. And you receive that for gifts of $100 or more for the Winter Pledge Drive at the Gospel Revolution. It is really, I mean, it's you're giving to the effort of spreading this good news, but the CD is worth it just by itself. And we need to hear from you tonight. We're already 25 minutes into the webcast, and we need to get our first caller. Can't go an hour and 10 minutes this week. But if we do, we do. I mean,
it worked out fine last
week. It worked out fine, but it's a much more interesting program when we get. It's interesting enough But when we get other input and we have emails, we want to thank our good friend Pep Washburn for donating $100. Pep will be receiving the CD.
Oh, Glenn, also let me tell you that I just got the update from Don. That actually is fitting on two CDs with about 45 minutes on each one.
Oh, it's a double CD.
Yeah, they're getting double.
Okay, so you get two CDs for the price, well, for nothing.
For the price of nothing.
And God Destroys the World. It's a powerful, powerful teaching, especially as more and more discussion of the end of the world and God's judgment and Armageddon and the rapture and all those things are coming down the pike. And God TV is doing a tremendous job with things. It is amazing to me that they're putting things on that are already patently provable false.
But the time's already passed.
Time's already passed, and they're still promoting this stuff. One guy, I forget his name, but I mentioned him a number of webcasts ago from New Zealand, and I can't think of his last name. And he was a very entertaining guy, but he talked about Henry Kissinger being the Antichrist. He talked about this thing all coming down by 2002, and he's dead. The guy died 6 months after they did this video, and they're still playing the video.
Yep.
It's unbelievable.
They don't even care that they know it's wrong.
It's just brazen.
They know that prophecies of judgment and catastrophe and all of that, for the guilty of mind, it provokes them to give. For the guilty of mind. Now, our major problem in raising funds in any traditional sense, Glenn, is that nobody that would is choosing not to give or can't give, they already know that there is no reason that they have to give other than what their concern is for other people.
Right.
And supporting the ministry. They know that they are not going to gain favor with God because they give. They know that it is not going to stop God's wrath from coming down on their household. They already know that. There's nothing to fear. There's no guilt. It's not going to be that they missed God, and if they had, they would have got this, and oh my gosh, I better do this because I really need help in that area of my life. And they're already wise to that. So when we make an appeal for funds to support the gospel, it has to be purely because you love the gospel and you want other people to hear it.
Right, and because you love other folks and you want people to know that the wrath of God has already taken place, God has already destroyed the world, and Pep will be receiving the two CD teaching God Destroys the World for his gift of $100, our good friend Pep Watson from Wisconsin. Mary Kustra donated $50 a month this week and pledged that. Thank you so much, Mary.
Yes, that's a $600 add to our total.
Yep. So, and we're going to be going through some other names as the webcast goes on. But we need to hear from you right now. 1-800-436-3260. 1-800-436-3260. Whether you're a first-time caller, one of our regular correspondents, we want to hear from you. 1-800-436-3260. All you got to do is go to the Gospel Revolution webpage, click on donations, and then do your best. Make a one-time gift. The monthly options are there. You will receive free and postage paid the CD, God Destroys the World, the two CD teaching, God Destroys the World. And God destroyed the world, didn't he, Michael?
Yes, and the world that needed to be destroyed has been destroyed. That is just, you know, folks, that's just such good news. If there was nothing else that this ministry promoted or shared or declared, I can tell you that this would be enough to want people to know. The fact of it is that, you know, after all of this time, there were many people who only heard the gospel of peace that I started teaching first. The gospel of grace started started just soon after that and grew for many, many years. And the understanding of righteousness, the understanding of the end of the world.
Why don't you explain the difference between the gospel of peace and the gospel of grace?
Well, it is a very good thing to consider, and there's only two things that you have to remember is that the gospel of peace, which God declared to the entire human race, the gospel of peace is not for the believer. The prophets foretold that the gospel of peace, that the covenant of peace would not be removed off of the earth. And it would be, every human being would be the recipient of the gospel of peace. So the term gospel, of course, means good news. And peace does not mean the gospel of a tranquil state of being in heart or in life. The gospel of peace literally means good news about the cessation of all hostilities. It's good news the war is over. The good news is that what we deserved under the law, you will never get. What we deserved in unbelief, we will never get. There's two things that the gospel of peace completely clears up. No one will ever be punished or shunned or neglected in any way by God for breaking his laws. Number one. And that bears repeating. No one on planet Earth, since the day that Jesus died on the cross, will ever face any displeasure in the eyes of God for breaking any and or all of God's laws altogether. The other thing that no human being will never face because of the gospel of peace is that no one will ever suffer any retribution or any slighting from God because of unbelief. Because those are the things that Jesus died for. The gospel of peace was enacted upon the death of Jesus Christ. And the death of Jesus Christ took away the curse. It took away the law. It took away the requirement to believe. The gospel of peace is much more associated with the resurrection of Jesus. The gospel of peace was administered to the entire human race, where God bestowed under the gospel of peace through the death, he took away the issue of sin. He took away the issue of unbelief. He took away the power of sin. But he didn't just leave us without the things that the death of Jesus removed off of us and restored us back to where we were. But he also imputed, through the resurrection of Jesus, he imputed to the entire human race his own righteousness. So in the very basics of the understanding of grace and peace, the gospel of peace means you will never get what you deserved. The gospel of grace is you have received what you do not deserve. And that's the gospel of grace and the gospel of peace. As I said, one manifested through the power of the death, another manifested through the power of the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And Jesus did not die on the cross for believers. He died on the cross for the entire human race. Therefore, the effectiveness of removing sin, the sin of unbelief, and of transgression of law was completely removed off of the human race 2,000 years ago. Glenn, I just repeat what I've known for years, and I become ecstatic with excitement and joy that I'm getting to say this to people around the world right now.
Yes.
And that the resurrection of Jesus has bestowed upon this planet a flood, as Isaiah foretold, that the righteousness of God would flood the earth as the waters cover the seas, and that there would be no place where that anyone would be able to hide from God's righteousness. His righteousness would flow to every nook and cranny, to all of the low places. It would cover the earth in the very same way that the floodwaters of Noah covered the entire earth. God's righteousness would, through the resurrection of Jesus Christ, flood the earth from heaven itself. We have been flooded. We have been saturated. We do not know that we walk around daily, immersed, submerged, and walking in the grace of God 24 hours a day. No matter where you are, what you are experiencing, you are submerged, engulfed, and filled with the grace of God. You have been completely, completely made void of all sin. You have been made completely void of all threats of judgment, of punishment, or dread of standing in the presence of God. That is the gospel. And anyone who teaches anything less than that does not teach the gospel.
Well, it's because it's like what they were waiting for when Jesus came.
Yep.
If they thought that having the Messiah come would overthrow Rome. And they're waiting for Rome to be overthrown still.
Yes.
And so they don't understand that having this righteousness cover the earth like the waters cover the seas, has not had an effect. Well, it's had an effect, of course, but it's it's not had the kind of effect that they think it's going to have on some second coming that the Bible never talks about, when Jesus is going to come on a white horse and he's going to slay everybody. And I mean, this is so much craziness.
Yeah.
And just, you know, it's amazing how history repeats itself. The same pharisaical attitude that rejected Christ because he was not a conquering military hero, that is what the Jack Van Imbe and the Hal Lindseys and the David Wilkersons, the Perry Stones, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, see Jesus as, a coming conquering military hero.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's not a soldier.
Yeah.
He's the Lord. He's the Lord Almighty. I mean, my God.
He has conquered all. You know,
it's already a done deal.
They speak of him as though he is not the conqueror. He has conquered. He conquered death, hell, and the grave. And they still are waiting for him. No wonder people of the Jewish faith reject Christianity. The smart ones reject it. Because they know that according to their scriptures, there is nothing about this Jesus that Christianity teaches. Because they know the declaration of peace. They know that they'll be out from under all of these things when the Messiah comes. And, you know, they are so desperately wanting to see the Messiah come. I was watching a thing on the Naked Archaeologist, which is so very fascinating. I love watching this guy. And he's not naked. He just deals with naked archaeology. And it's always about the Bible. And he was showing that the color of blue that the priests had on their garments, and they read the text explicitly that it came from I can't remember the blood or something inside of a very specific fish had to be what dyed that blue string. It wasn't just anybody's got something, make something blue here. And this is how intricate that it gets. And I know that there's profound revelation in this. And the more that you learn about this, the more you learn the gospel, actually, if you let it apply. But it had to come from this very singular fish, and that the dye had to come from that fish to dye that string blue, the one string blue that was in the robes. And so now this one guy has taken it upon himself to number one, just to find that fish. It's been found for the first time in thousands of years as to what the fish actually was. And so now he's trying to farm them and get them, and the people who are still looking for the Messiah, and these were very sincere people. It was heartrending to watch them and, you know, to see them filled with such excitement that they were a part of the coming of the Messiah, even though they're wrong, but and they are trying to reproduce this fish so that they can get the dye to dye the string blue, because they know that everything has to be exactly perfect for the Messiah to come.
Right, including the construction of the third temple.
Oh, absolutely, yes. And
which just happens to be on the same place that the Dome on the Rock is, the
yep.
third most holy shrine in Islam.
Yeah. Creating conflict that is unresolvable, unresolvable. Man, do you realize that if we could accept, if we accepted that Jesus was the Messiah, how much of that would resolve so many things? Oh, my gosh. Because it is these hardliners that are that on both sides that are pressing this to the hilt, and you know, the revelation of just Jesus and Jesus alone. I don't understand why that Jesus isn't enough for Christians. Why is it not enough for David Wilkerson? You know, Brother David, why is Jesus not enough for you? Why do you have to tell people of a judgment that, according to the Bible you read, came on the entire planet 2,000 years ago? Why do you have to create another one? We really are calling on people to become believers in the Lord Jesus Christ.
We're asking people to advance beyond what Adam and Eve did.
Yeah.
That's why, Michael. All this stuff, ladies and gentlemen, all this proclaiming and the Pentecostal whooping and the falling over on the floor and the rolling and the laughing and you go into the Orthodox religions and the smoke and the incense and the praying in tongues and all these things that we must do, the coming judgment of God and the preparation for the Messiah to come on the Mount of Olives, and all these things are fig leaves. They're fig leaves to cover up our nakedness. And it's naked archaeologists. I like that.
Yeah, and thank God we are not naked. We are clothed with the robes of righteousness.
Yeah.
And if we can get this across to this planet, Glenn, I am sorry, but I am convinced that this planet will change. Even as we have watched the lives of individuals change and embrace people they never thought they could embrace. I've never taught the ought-tos and ought-not-tos of how you should embrace people.
Yeah.
But people just start embracing. And they're number one, they embrace themselves. And then suddenly they don't have the division with the Pentecostal. They don't have the division with the Hindu. They don't have the division with the Muslim. Suddenly they see themselves all as one, and conversations and compassion comes that because the walls are down.
Exactly. Well, we got this great letter here from our sister Dina. She says, "Hello, Mike and friends. I would like to take this time to thank you for your loving ministry. I would not be alive today if it was not for the peace, love, and grace messages. At this point in my life, I am facing some extreme difficulties. However, I find comfort when I listen to the audios, the broadcasts on Wednesday night, and the emails that are sent to me. I have followed Mike Williams' ministry for a very long time. I have witnessed him preaching both gospels. And believe me, this grace message is awesome. Thanks, Mike, for sharing this message and not being selfish in Christ, Dina."
You are welcome, Dina. Goodness gracious. I mean, how could I not? When you hear, you know, just one life like that, that is my motivation. It really is. And I'm a very, very fortunate man to get to do what I do. Here's the issue, Glenn, is that I'm going to continue doing this whether anybody gives anything or not. The gifts that people give, the investment that they put in this, ensures that others get to hear it. And it helps us to be able to reach others. And I would really, really love to begin by the end of this year to start our billboard campaign and start with one or two in some spot in the world with just some gospel-grabbing statement and nothing at the bottom except gospelrevolution.com. Because our effort is because of the rejection of the church to the gospel. And they have rejected the gospel, at least the ones that I've been to and those that have heard it. Now, there's been some that have embraced it, but they no longer exist.
Right.
I have to admit that. This is not... Please, if you're listening and you're a pastor and you have a church of 1,000 people and you're wanting to grow your church and that's your goal in life, run for the hills. Do not listen to me if your goal is to increase your congregation, because when you free people who have been in bondage to tithing and self-righteousness, let me tell you, it's going to fall apart. I have so many friends who used to be pastors, and the teaching that I brought destroyed their churches, including the my cohort here.
Yes, indeed. And thank you for doing that, Michael, too.
That's what I've gotten from everyone. You show me somebody who's gone into people's churches and their teaching destroyed the church, and that all that I get from those pastors is thanks.
Well, it really mirrors the gospel or the work of Christ. What did Jesus do? He always scattered them. I mean, ultimately, even the destruction of the temple and the destruction of Jerusalem scattered the Jews to the four corners of the earth. This is what the gospel does. It intermingles everybody. See, that's why, that's why at the end of the day, we don't know who's Jewish and who's not.
Yeah.
Now, I'm talking about physically a Jew, because everybody's been intermingled. We don't know. We don't know who has the right to that land or not. Now, you can make a geopolitical argument, and I'll make that all day long, that there should be some place on the planet where the Jewish people should be the majority because of what's happened throughout history. But if you get the tapes, or the CDs, rather, from the Gospel Revolution Convention, you'll hear me teach about the Jewishness of the gospel. And it's fascinating, and it's interesting, and it's another way of looking at our identity in Christ. But, Michael, this is what the gospel does. It scatters people. It makes people intermingle with the rest of society. Instead of ghettoizing people within the four walls of a church, it makes people leave and have to intermingle and have to go into society and be part of it.
Yes, it scatters to integrate, and it really does.
It scatters to integrate. That's
absolutely.
I'm writing that down right now.
Well, good. But it does.
It scatters to
integrate, and thank God for it. You know, I can't even imagine looking back 25, 50 years from now and watching the progression of this mighty revolution that we are a part of. And people might say, Mike, what are you talking about, mighty revolution? You're trying to raise $25,000 measly dollars just to get through the next several months. And other ministries are hauling in millions a day. Well, let me tell you something. I believe it. You know, anybody can chalk this up to anything that they want. But the one thing you're not dealing with is someone who does not truly believe what he's saying, and is saying it for a particular means of gain. this has gained me nothing.
Yeah, it's clearly not a get-rich-quick scheme, that's for sure.
No, obvious. I mean, what is it? It's 8:50 and we hadn't got a caller yet.
Let's remind people that the phone number is 1-800-436-3260, 1-800-436-3260. This is why we really believe it's a revolution. Yeah, listen, let me tell you something. The original disciples, they had to go to Jesus to have a miracle just to pay their taxes. Some of us can relate to that. And but somehow it got paid. But these were not wealthy guys, the original revolutionaries, and they didn't agree, and they had all kinds of difficulties, and they had all kinds of emotional issues, and they didn't have it all figured out. We're right in there with them. And but we're asking you to participate tonight. $25,000 seems like a small amount compared to the millions, but it is 10 times the amount of our initial webcast request of $2,500.
Yes.
So I mean, we're growing, folks, and you can
help. We are.
We need your help, though. We want to thank Pep Washburn and Mary Kustra for their donations. Jeff and Carolyn Cotton contributed a one-time gift of $250 and then pledged $250 a month.
$200 a month,
excuse me.
Yes.
For that would be an additional $2,400 a year. So that is very, very helpful. But we need to hear from you. Even if you don't want to give a gift, or you've already given, or whatever the case is, let us hear from you right now. 1-800-436-3260. We realize that most people, in fact, listen to the archive because it's just more convenient. But if you're out there listening live, and it's about 10 minutes to the top of the hour on Wednesday night, please pick up the phone and give us a call and let us know you're out there. 1-800-436-3260. We got to get Sean O'Halloran hopping, and he's waiting to take your call and hopefully your pledge at 1-800-436-3260. This is night number two of the Gospel Revolution Winter Pledge Drive, and we are endeavoring to raise $25,000 over these next 21 days to... Well, Michael, why don't you explain to the folks what that money's going to?
Well, number one, I mean, just putting on a broadcast is an effort, and the daily function of telephones and you know, the people that are taking care of the things that have to be done, it helps finance the spreading of the gospel. Regardless of what it is, whether it's a trip or whatever it might be, we also, I'm telling you, the thing that I am so looking forward to, Glenn, is us getting to that point to where that we can put up that first billboard. You know, we're not going to come to a point to where that somebody could finance it and give us, you know, a few $100,000 to put these things up all around the planet. But just putting the first one up, and of course that is going to be a monthly expense. You don't get those things up without paying, and just pay for it once, unless you own your own billboard, which you have to own your own property to do that. And I don't know any interstate that along which I own any property, or Glenn, either one. So it's all the effort to keep me to where that I am in a position where I can go out and share the gospel, and it really is for the spreading of the gospel.
Indeed. So that's what we're doing. We need your help. Go to gospelrevolution.com, click on donations, do your best one-time gift or a monthly pledge. It's very self-explanatory at gospelrevolution.com. But then email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com and let us know what you did so we can count towards the goal of $25,000. We've had a generous giving this week, and we know that there'll be more coming this week. Chris Cross with a $200 donation. Lee Lau with a $2,500 donation. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Lee. Lee Lau, of course, from Hong Kong, China. And we have listeners and supporters all over the world. There's revolutionaries all over the place, but we need your help tonight, and we need your participation at 1-800-436-3260. I can't believe that there's somebody out there listening and not picking up the phone after all these appeals, but I'll have to help me with my unbelief, Lord. I believe, but help me with my unbelief.
Oh, and also I wanted to tell you that I talked with Lee this week, and he also said that he is preparing to bring several people with him from Hong Kong and to the convention in November.
Super.
We're going to have several others coming from Hong Kong in attendance of the convention, which we want people to begin to gear up for and, you know, begin to make your plans.
Yes, we'll be getting information out on the website and all that after we get through the Winter Pledge Drive.
Yes.
That's where some of the money's going to. They get flyers out and things like that.
That's true.
So 1-800-436-3260 is the number, 1-800-436-3260. Michael, when you're financially strapped, you personally,
right?
Do you ever just want to just chuck it all and say, you know what, this is going to have to stand on its own, what we've done thus far, and just move on?
You know, I can definitely say that has happened in years past, as I was still letting go of cause and effect religion, and I would, you know, say, well, you know, God, if it's not important to you, it's not important to me. And I'm telling you, my heart was being broken from this addiction to cause and effect religion, even in the observation of the support or lack thereof of the gospel that I really believe is the truth. And let me tell you, your entire journey in the gospel, once you buy into it, once it buys into you, it is not going to let you go until it exterminates every religious thought you ever had. And man, I tell you what, the process is amazing, and there's times you just rather be dead than alive, even. It's like it just doesn't seem worth it. I mean, and who cares, and all of these things. So yes, I did that. Now, for whatever purpose, whatever reason, other than just the effect of the gospel, I don't think about chucking it all and just letting it go and just moving on. If the thought comes, it comes so briefly that it's readily dismissed. And I don't have a quit button anymore. I've looked for it, and believe me, in the past, I have definitely looked for the off switch on the gospel, and it doesn't exist anymore. And that doesn't happen anymore. I do definitely know that it happened in the past years, but that's been quite some time, actually, that it was just like, you know, who cares? Because I do care, Glenn. Mm-hmm. I care not just about the gospel. I don't do this because I care about the gospel. I do it because I care about people.
Right.
And
I was talking to Sean before the webcast, and I was talking about, you know, people like Lee Lau organizing people to come to Hong Kong from Hong Kong to Houston, and somebody that has not been involved in evangelicalism and really steeped in it and really had it affect their lives cannot relate to what we're talking about. You just can't imagine how important the gospel is,
right,
in retrospect.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely true. and of course my heart has been shaped in such a way to embrace the long term. And the long term is that I'm going to enjoy sharing the gospel if we have no callers tonight at all. I'm still going to share the gospel. If the support dried up, I'm still going to share the gospel. My effectiveness will drop considerably. But it isn't going to stop my own passion for the gospel, because I've gone through all of that, Glenn. I've gone through all of the, I remember the days when I needed someone else's approval. I remember those days when I needed to have the pat on the back, and I respect that, and I love giving out pats on the back, and it's not that I don't enjoy it, but when people tell me the things that they do about the gospel now, and the things that have happened just simply because they heard a tape one time, and just like Scott Johnson in Alaska, who I was speaking with the other day, and he said the one thing, he was a teenage faith healer, actually, and going through all kinds of guilt because there was something wrong with him because everybody he prayed for didn't get healed. And he heard me say one thing on a tape, and this was a young man at 21 years old at the time, and he heard me say one thing, and he said that sin could not separate you from God. And he said a domino effect took place, and he said his mind, because he knew the Bible well, raced through 100 verses that affirmed that what I was saying was true, but he had just never heard anybody say it before. And it revolutionized life on planet Earth for him. He is now a teacher in Alaska, and he shares with one of his closest friends is an atheist, who now says he's not really after what he's heard Scott share about the gospel, cannot say anymore that he's an atheist, but Scott doesn't want him to give up being an atheist. He likes having an atheist friend. He says, no, it's okay. You don't have to give up being an atheist, but you don't understand. I really see this, and it really is helping me to understand things. So dividing to include, scattering to include.
Scattering to integrate. I wrote it down.
To integrate. Yes. See, I would have never been able to say it again.
It would have come out eventually, as all things do.
Yeah, for sure.
1-800-436. All right. We're at an hour. Still, the phone still hasn't rang. It's fine, folks, but we really do want to hear from you. I've got Joe Klein in the studio. I got Sean O'Halloran in the studio. I got Mike Williams in the home office in Houston, Texas. This is Glenn Klein online in Tampa, Florida. We want to hear from someplace else. 1-800-436-3260. Where are our correspondents tonight?
Yeah, call and tell other people why you support the gospel.
Yes. You don't have to give any money even right now.
Not that we're not going to hit you up for it, but you don't have to.
there's no, you know, and that's one of the best things about it, is that there is no guilt associated with this. I mean, we are not guilting people into thinking that somehow God is going to strike them in a negative way or bless them in a positive way upon their decision to give or to not give.
No, that's for sure, and I really do believe, though, that the motivation and drive, as we get older, that we lose the motivation to put effort into helping ourselves reach our goals. I really do believe that, Glenn, that just age, and some people reach that at a very early age, actually. And the motivation to be able to do to benefit yourself just begins to dwindle. I don't know if it is a thing of just human nature or that it's something that God has placed in us or what it is. But there's a lot of people that have lost their motivation and to really even to help themselves and to be able to be productive. And this has been on my mind for several weeks now, and I know that my heart has gone through such a revision through the power of the gospel. I know that I will never be able to motivate myself to be productive because I have needs. Now, it doesn't mean that I can't be productive because I have needs, but it has to be because of the interest that I have in helping other people first. It's just like with my contribution. I was thinking about this week, and I got online, and I know that we contribute from the office to St. Jude's. And I thought, you know what? No, I still want to do more. St. Jude's is a tremendous place that helps suffering children and their parents to be able to stay with them. And so I got online. I thought, you know, this is so easy. And I signed up for a monthly contribution to St. Jude's. And because I know that I want more motivation in my life, but I know that to do it for my own benefit is just lacking. So my plan is to, of course, number one, I know that what I do with the gospel is not for my own gain. That's been proven for sure. But I still think there's other things, you know, just like the support of St. Jude's Hospital. I'm looking around Houston to see where, you know, I can be of a help on days that I don't have a lot to do, you know, whether it's a soup kitchen or the situation that we're in right now with people's finances and stuff, and they're having to get groceries, and, you know, they just need hands and bodies there to help fill up a bag of groceries and hand them to somebody. But all of these things, they're not in my mind because I want to do something. But I really do know, in my heart of hearts, I really do know that my motivation to be successful in this life can no longer be connected to my own need. It is going to have to be out of the needs of others. My need don't touch my heart anymore. It just doesn't. And I really want to encourage people out there that whether it is helping in reaching people for the gospel or St. Jude's, I would love to find a way to begin to raise funds for St. Jude's Hospital, even myself. Or whether it's just, you know, getting outside yourself, find somebody that you can be of a help to, and without possibly any thanks for what you're doing. But if you're having a problem being motivated to even rescue your own self out of your own dilemma, change your focus and put it on others. And right now I'm telling you, there's just a multitude of biblical things and kingdom principles that began to come to me, and such as Jesus saying, he that gains his life will lose it, and he that loses his life will gain it, and on and on and on and on it could go. But really, the emphasis and the motivation for why we do what we do, why are we struggling to be successful? Every successful person that I know of, that their only goal is to make their situation better, loses the motivation to do it. And it just seems like that people who reach out to others maintain the motivation even to be able to help themselves.
Good preaching, Roberts. Well, we've reached that magic moment now of 1 hour and 10 minutes into the webcast when things are going to break loose at 1-800-436-3260. We're waiting to take your phone call at 1-800-436-3260. This is the second night of the Gospel Revolution Winter Pledge Drive. We want to hear from you whether you have money to give or an insight to give, or you want to just say hello and why other people should support the Gospel Revolution and why you do. Mike, you sent me this article today, The Coming Evangelical Collapse. And very interesting, this guy's perspective. He says, we are on the verge within 10 years of a major collapse of evangelical Christianity. This is by a guy named Michael Spencer. This, by the way, is from the Christian Science Monitor. This breakdown will follow the deterioration of the mainline Protestant world and will fundamentally alter the religious and cultural environment in the West. He goes on to talk, to say, within two generations, evangelicalism will be a house deserted of half of its occupancy, or half of its occupants. Between 25 and 35% of American days are evangelicals. In the Protestant 20th century, evangelicals flourished, but they will soon be living in a very secular and religious antagonistic 21st century. This collapse will herald the arrival of an anti-Christian chapter of the post-Christian West. Intolerance of Christianity will rise to levels many of us had not believed possible in our lifetimes, and public policy will become hostile towards evangelical Christianity, seeing it as the opponent of the common good. Millions of evangelicals will quit. Thousands of ministries will end. Christian media will be reduced, if not eliminated. Many Christian schools will go into rapid decline. I'm convinced the grace and mission of God will reach to the ends of the earth. But the end of the evangelicalism as we know it is close.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's powerful. Good preaching. That's good preaching, Robert.
Powerful. And I absolutely believe that, and that's not a prophecy. That's just having your finger on the pulse. And the grace is going, even though there's going to be a total collapse of what we know of Christianity today, which is what I've been saying that for years myself. We will watch that, but sometimes a giant has to grow big to fall hard, and this is exactly what's happening, and this is exactly what we want to see. And folks, with the reality of that, if this gentleman is true, do you realize how much more important that makes what we are doing?
Right, because this guy is an evangelical, by the way, who wrote this.
He is.
Yeah.
And there's got to be something to fill that void. But I don't believe that it's going to fall to the point to where that, you know, that Christians are being persecuted and all of this. I think what's going to happen is that we're going to reach the Christian world. And they're going to not only reach, we're not only going to reach them, but the world who would have been persecuting them will not only not be persecuting them, they will be touting and rejoicing with them in this understanding of the gospel, which has nothing to do with evangelical Christianity, which is on its way out, folks. It's on its way out.
Yeah, this of what we share has absolutely nothing to do with Christianity. Nothing.
Yeah.
It is counter to Christianity. Christianity, this is what this guy says. He says, evangelicals have identified their movement with the culture war and with political conservatism. Absolutely. And by the way, the Republicans have done the same with the evangelicals. This will prove to be a very costly mistake for the Republicans, too. That's my little parenthetical addition to that comment. Evangelicals will increasingly be seen as a threat to cultural progress. Public leaders will consider evangelicals bad for America, bad for education, bad for children, and bad for society. The evangelicalism and the marriage of convenience with the Republican Party has already destroyed the Republican Party. And now it's just a matter of time until evangelicalism is swallowed up by this same mentality of being part of a political movement versus a personal relationship with a God that dwells inside of you and that dwells inside of all human beings and makes all human beings righteous and equal in the sight of God, regardless of what they think, regardless of where they go, regardless of who they hang around with, regardless of what they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and the one of the things that I can tell you that swept Barack Obama into office in his term was not even necessarily people rejecting the Republican way of doing things. It was rejecting that the Republicans were married to the church, and not to the church, but to evangelical Christianity. And, you know, they're tired of self-righteousness that has invaded. And I really think we need both political parties.
Oh, sure. We need a smart opposition. This was one of the problems with the Bush administration is the Democrats were not smart in their opposition. You need smart and thoughtful opposition, and it's both parties have become just one giant party, basically, with a left and right side of it. But as far as from a practical standpoint, the Democrats and the Republicans, how in the world can Obama be so popular, and we're going to see his policies become less and less popular because of what he stands for? And what he represents, people want oneness. People want hope, Michael, right now.
Yeah,
and they're willing to. I guarantee you that if the American people really understood what's happening right now, with the economy, with the spending, and with all the craziness, there would be much less support for even his policies. But because he represents this possibility of oneness and change and hope and optimism and youthfulness and intelligence, his popularity has been skyrocketing out there.
Yeah, their conclusions, my observation is that the conclusions of the American people in this election was not a choice over a Democrat over a Republican. It was over anything over an evangelical right-winger. It was anything but that. And God knows they were running them, that's for sure. And that's what they tried to cling on to at the last moment, even of the election, which they found out was catastrophic to the Republican Party. But people are turning away from this, and if people actually knew what my politics were, they would be absolutely shocked. But I don't talk about my politics. But I can tell you that the involvement of the religious right in the Republican Party has destroyed the effectiveness of the Republican Party, and I was very much a part of that, even that part of it, because I remember sitting on the platform with Pat Robertson when he was running for president, and at the time when my mind was still saturated into that religious mindset to a great degree. And what filled it, infused it with life, is now killing it.
Now, he goes on to say, and this is a telling paragraph here, he says, "We evangelicals have failed to pass on to our young people an orthodox form of faith that can take root and survive the secular onslaught." And I will parenthetically put in, and thank God for that. "Ironically, the billions of dollars we spent on youth ministers, Christian music, publishing, and major media has produced a culture of young Christians who know next to nothing about their own faith except how they feel about it. Our young people have deep beliefs about the culture war, but do not know why they should obey Scripture, the essentials of theology, or the experience of spiritual discipline and community. Coming generations of Christians are going to be monumentally ignorant and unprepared for culture-wide pressures." On the one hand, he's saying that they've missed the boat because they focus on the culture war. On the other hand, he's saying, well, we've got to teach them all these things, like obeying the Scripture, so that they can deal with the culture war.
Yeah. Ah, it's exhausting to even try to think about.
It really is. But I think that it shows that even people within their own camp can sense that this thing just it's just about to implode upon itself.
Yeah.
And we'll be ready with our billboards, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll be coming to you most Wednesday nights with the good news. And we got about 10 minutes left, which, listen, a lot can happen in 10 minutes. Basically, we've broken it down. We need about $1,200 a day during these 21 days, and exactly $0 have come in so far tonight. And we are not going to feel bad about it if the phone does ring or if we do not get an email, but we sure would like to. We sure would like to get an email or a pledge. And
it's like, hello, is anybody out there?
Hello.
Testing.
Well,
we did that at the first of the broadcast before.
We always do it at the start.
Yes, we do.
Well, I'm going to say 1-800-436-3260 one more time. 1-800-436-3260. Who will call and say hello to us and get us off the schneid? It's funny. We use that term, get us off the schneid. It's an athletic term. And then... I forget who was it Ambergy or George Howell? Somebody sent it to us.
I can't remember who
that was. The origination of where that term came from, and whoever did that, I really appreciate it because it was very interesting. But we need to get off the schneid here at 22 minutes after the hour, and 1-800-436-3260 is the Glenn Klein online toll-free pledge hotline tonight on night number two of the Gospel Revolution pledge drive. This has been a typical pledge drive night, other than the fact that we haven't had any money come in yet, where we talk mostly about gospel-related issues with the commercial for the Gospel Revolution. That's why we go an extra half an hour. But some of the things that have been stated, like this whole concept of scattering to integrate, these are rich things that come through. And we're trying to raise $25,000 so that more richness can be shared with more people. That's the whole purpose. We're doing it just to share more good news with more people. And it's I wouldn't say frustrating, but it would be encouraging to get a call. So far, we've raised, let me add this up one more time, we've raised around $7,000 towards our goal of 25 grand. So,
up until tonight, we're right on track. We're right on track for raising these funds.
Yeah.
But we have to continue. We can't get derailed.
We shall not be derailed. All right. We'll give it a couple more minutes here.
Yeah. Should we bring out the threats? If somebody doesn't give tonight, somebody's going to hell.
Well, you don't go to hell, but, you know... You're not gonna have that financial breakthrough that you've been waiting for.
That breakthrough for 2009. It's the 2009 breakthrough you're looking for.
The phone is actually ringing here.
Wow.
Yeah, 1-800-436-3260. We'll even go overtime if we start getting a rush.
See who our brave soul is.
Hold on. This is Glenn Klein Online with Michael Williams of the Gospel Revolution. This is professional radio. Not really. And from California, thank you very much for calling. Mike Massey, our Southern California correspondent. Michael!
Good evening.
How are you?
There he is. Hey, Mikey.
Mikey. Yeah, I'm the guy that emailed the schneid thing to you, and you guys forgot.
Oh, that's right, Mike.
Thank you.
I'm like old man on the totem pole.
Not at all. We just forgot.
Well, that's what I thought. So I'm sitting here thinking, oh shoot, you know, I need to get off the Schneid so I can get you off the Schneid. I've been on the Schneid for so long. Now, we got to come up with a plan here because I'm Schneided out.
Yeah.
You know? We got to turn this thing around. We got to
turn
it around.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of people are. Uh-huh. And
I know, and I'm listening to you, and you're going on, and I'm in the same place you are because you and I talk, you know.
Yes.
And I got that same mentality. I'm like, you know, I'm having a hard time getting motivated because I don't really feel like I need anything. I mean, I could care less, but at the same time, wait a minute, you know, there's reality. My kids need to eat. We need a place to live. You know, thank God all my cars are paid for and, you know, so on and so forth. But, you know, I want to give to you. I like to give to St. Jude's, too. That's one of my favorite places, and feed the children and you know, all these other things. And I'm like, you know, this is ridiculous. We got to turn this around.
Well, what do you want to do?
Well, that's what I'm saying. You guys got the platform. You guys pray that everybody gets off the Schneid. Lay hands on the phone. Send out prayer claws. I don't know.
We're ready to cast out devils here. About
cast
any
them
minute.
Out.
No.
There you go.
It's just one of those interesting nights. That's all.
Yeah, well, I'm sure the money will come, you know, it doesn't matter where it comes from or how, I'm sure it will, but, you know, it's like, personally, I'm like, you know, this is like, on the one hand, it's like Mike was saying, you know, it doesn't really bother me, and I was telling him, and maybe other people are in the same boat, but for a while, you know, I got to a point where I quit worrying about it, because I just didn't worry, then I started worrying about not being worried. I'm thinking, I should be worried. Why am I not worried? You know, and it's like, then you know, you go around that mountain enough times and you have to finally settle someplace and, you know, you finally hear that still small voice, you know, we just shut up and just relax. And then that's all
really.
And the bottom line is that at a certain point, that's all you can do anyway. And you know, if God is the provider, he's the provider. And then that's it. He either is or he isn't. He's either there or he's not. And then, of course, we believe that he is. We know that he is. So.
Well, all right. Well, Mike Williams, what would you say to that comment by Mike Massey?
Well, I think more than a comment, I think Michael's, you know, reaching for the same thing that everyone is. And that is that, yes, God is a provider, but that provision, I really do believe, comes from within us. I mean, we have all things that pertain to life and godliness. And provision is not something that is now initiated in heaven and bestowed upon us or given to us. Anything that we have in experience in this life that would be considered, you know, if you're trying to figure out whether it's God or not, well, it doesn't have to not be God just because it came out of the inside of you, because we really do have this treasure in earthen vessels. And
that's why we say follow your heart, because it comes from within your own heart.
Absolutely, and it is that. It is learning that trust to where that you really can. And here's the thing. It's like what Michael and I were talking about earlier this week, that until your heart lets go of the expectations of what will happen or won't happen if you follow your heart, you will never follow your heart. When people start saying they're following their heart, but then the outcome isn't good, it looks bad, it looks like it was not the right thing to do, then people start shrinking away over the years from following their heart. But to follow your heart, you must divorce your inclination as to what your heart is saying to you from the immediate result. Let me repeat that. From the immediate result of doing that. Because I can tell you, I can take you through stories throughout the Bible where that people did follow their hearts and they wound up in wells, they wound up in prisons, they wound up in the most negative places, they wound up in caves, they wound up in the most detestable situations. But the only way that you can view the issue of following your heart is truly not only, and it can't even be bound to the time frame of this life. I share this gospel because I am following my heart. Now, I cannot be sharing this gospel and declare that I'm following my heart because of the massive results we see. And tonight being one of the good demonstrations of that. And not only that, but the number of people that we actually reach. We reach a lot that we don't know we are, even through the webcast. And then the people who have heard, they share. This is something that's happening around the planet. But you see, for me to follow my heart, to follow this gospel, rather than something that is going to give, to supply my need. Because, folks, I know how to preach the other message. I know how to say what it takes to get people to give. Now, I'd have to get a different audience than the ones who've listened to me because none of that works on them. They're not going to be guilted into anything at all.
Right.
It's not going to happen. And I'm very proud of them for that. I'm proud of the work that I've done that would cause them to not succumb to that from me or anybody else. But when you follow your heart, you have to have your heart set on the eternal. You have to know that when you're following your heart, the full result or the manifestation of following your heart may not show up until after you're dead. And the fact of it is that most people who have their most profound effect on society, it is after they're dead. So, you know, why should I get, you know, in a pinch here and think, I mean, it's just like doing this webcast. In my mind, let me tell you what happens in my mind. I know this is going on an archive. I know that this is recorded in eternity, if you will, in this planet. And I can see a time. If not tomorrow, if not tonight, if not next week, if not next month, if not within the space of my lifetime, I see this going into somebody's ears at some point, maybe a generation after me, maybe my grandkids, maybe a generation after my grandkids, maybe a generation after them. But I know that it is going out, and I know that it is going to accomplish what is in my heart to do. So I cannot look at the short-term results. To follow your heart, to truly follow your heart, and it's just like people deciding whether or not to give into helping us in the ministry. It can't be on the short term. If you're giving because you're in trouble or out of trouble, that's not following your heart.
Right.
You do what is in your heart to do, regardless. I mean, my gosh, we've got there are some of our support comes from people who you just can't believe what their situations are and what they could benefit. Let me put case in point, and that is Don and Judy Murphy. And when Don and Judy took over doing the CDs and DVDs, I was trying my best to negotiate with them so that I could pay them even as I had paid the person who I was paying before. And did everything that I could do and finally got direct calls from both of them. Forget it. We're not taking anything. Now, Don and Judy, when they first started giving to help me share the gospel, they were homeless. And I'm not talking about in some abstract way. I'm telling you, they were homeless. When they started giving money, they had kids. And they started supporting the ministry of the gospel. It was the most difficult thing that I've ever done, was to take funds from them. And so now the CDs are being done, and let me tell you something. They're not looking for an immediate, I can tell you, they're not looking for God to shower something down on them. And they live from Judy's paycheck, and also from Don's disability. And this man's been through more surgeries and more medical crisis than I've ever seen a human being ever go through. And yet he's there every day to fill those orders. And he wants it done right. And he wants it done quickly. He wants to serve the people as accurately as he can. And he will not let the ministry pay him for doing it. Now, don't tell me they can't use the money. But see, they're not looking at the immediate result. They could have looked at the immediate result of, wow, that's going to be extra funds for us. And it definitely would have been.
Right.
For sure. Mm-hmm. It was for our last person. But they did it from their heart. So when no matter what you do, whether it is what you're sharing, where you're giving, the joy of life, the motivation of life does not come from what causes you to gain. And if you're going to wait until you gain to give, you're probably never going to give.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is a very good way to wrap it up tonight. Michael Massey, see how you inspired here at the end?
Well, I'll tell you what, I absolutely 100% agree with that, and I've lived that and continued to. And it's almost the place I get is like, you know, everyone's got their own personal experience with God, and I recall the days when, you know, there's a divine flow. Mike talked about it. There's like a river, you know, you get in and you're in this divine flow, and this really is effortless. You know, you might be working your tail off, maybe harder than you ever have in your life, yet it's effortless. And there's just abundance. You know, when you've been in that river, and then all of a sudden your boat gets stuck in the, you know, and to make a long story short, you know, when you're in the desert, you know, you remember the river and you want to go back to the river, you know, and that's, I think, you know, as we progress, and for Mike to say that, that's, you know, a perfect thing to do. I think most of the people that listen to him probably have that attitude. And I don't think anyone gives to you to get or thinks that there's a benefit outside of helping others. But I think for him to focus on that, and I think as I have been too, is to remind people that, you know, and everyone, you know, out of their own hearts, I get upset because I can't do more or as much as I want to, because I really want to help people. I don't care about me. It's like Mike said, I don't really care about me that way. I mean, I have my family and all these other things that I want to take care of, but it's just, that's where the real pleasure in life comes from, is to get this in front of someone and help them get to where I am in that really good spiritual place. There's nothing
free
more than
you
can buy that.
What'd you say, Michael?
Free from guilt and judgment. That's
free from guilt and judgment.
Absolutely.
Amen.
It's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, very much. Want to thank everybody who's going to be giving this week on the archives. Just go to gospelrevolution.com. Click on donations. Do your best in a one-time gift or a monthly donation towards our goal. And let us know so we can count it towards the goal by emailing us this week at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. I want to thank Joe Klein and Sean O'Halloran for producing and engineering and call screening this webcast. Until next time, this is Glenn Klein online for the Gospel Revolution saying, Shalom, everybody!